the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. There's no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, welcome. It is Greenberg. It is Dockage. I am Dockage sitting right across from me, fully
made
up. This is
unbelievable, isn't it? You know, bald-headed man wearing makeup.
Seth Greenberg, two-time ACC Coach of the Year. And, of course, we know him as the Coach Whisperer.
Yes, we do. What is your...
I got nothing. Just an untalented, bad-haired schmuck. Hey, all right, I got to get right into this.
You're going to get it, because you know what you said? When you're a little confused, you just got to get
right.
You're moving well.
Yeah, the hip is good. For those of you that have asked, none of you have. But if you would ask, I got a good hip going. Everything is fine. I'm moving and grooving. Seth, I got to ask you. The Commercial Appeal in Memphis comes out with an article where Penny Hardaway, in a deposition, under oath, says, I never recruited a player to his high school. The NCAA has suspended him because of $11,500 worth of expenses in moving a kid from Nashville to Memphis.
But he also said that he doesn't know where his money goes because he has someone else handle his money.
And he doesn't read
the rule book. What do you make of this?
Here's the thing
that bothers me about the whole thing. Penny Hardaway was a great player. And Penny Hardaway, what he's done at Memphis in this short period of time in terms of acquiring talent, has been incredible. He's done a lot of good things. He started an AAU program. He's gotten into the community. He's been involved in helping a lot of different kids. That's great. Once you decide to either coach a high school team or once you decide to obviously get involved in coaching college, like to say that you haven't read the rule book, all right, is absolutely, to me, asinine.
All right, let me play devil's advocate. Did you read the NCAA rule book?
Sure did. Didn't we have to take a test?
Yeah.
So I mean, like, when you take a job, it's your responsibility to know that the responsibilities and the liabilities of that position. I mean, it's just the way it is. I mean, the NCAA makes us obviously go through a curriculum and take a test,
certification,
and be certified, and things of that nature. And to me, the only thing that really bothers me about the whole thing, or one of the things that bothers me about the whole thing, is the arrogance of, I'm just coaching basketball. I don't have to know the rules. To me, that sounds like a great answer in a deposition. The question is, in a deposition, you're under oath. It sounds like an answer that is ambiguous enough to cover that you're under oath. And to me, it's a slap in the face to anyone else that is, I guess, 100% saying, there's not a separate set of rules. Just because you have your own sneaker. There's not a separate set of rules because you were.
But these are rules when he was in high school. I think we need to make that clear.
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
Same thing.
When he was coaching in high school, they're going to forfeit their state championships that they had with James Wiseman, on their team. And again, I don't know if that's good or bad, but I mean, does everyone recruit in Memphis? Does everyone recruit in New York? Does everyone recruit in Chicago? Does everyone recruit in Indianapolis? I don't know. Just the idea, and like I said, I think Penny Hardaway is doing some incredible things. So don't at me. All right? Don't at me and don't come at me. But when someone says, I don't know the rules, to me, what does that mean?
Do you think this impacts the NCAA at all?
No, I don't. I'll tell you what it impacts. Someone's going to look at his compliance test because obviously to be able to go out and road recruit in college basketball, you got to pass compliance test.
Tell you something else. Now, I don't know anything about moving expenses in Memphis relative to Nashville, but it's only 200 miles. 11 grand's a lot. I just moved. I didn't pay 11 grand. But that's a different story. You don't think that what came out to Tuesday impacts the NCAA in any way because it's a high school thing?
I don't think the NCAA can use this to hold it against Penny Hardaway because it's not under their jurisdiction. I mean, they don't have a jurisdiction. Now, what will they maybe try to use it to say that he is negligent in terms of understanding the responsibilities that go along with that job? Well, it was a different job. It was
right.
High school coaches. You know, obviously, if he's passed the compliance test, and he's taken the compliance test, which I'm sure he has. I mean, I can't imagine a scenario where he hasn't. Because he's out on the road, and to get certified at an institution, you got to sign off. Remember that?
Can I tell you a story?
Oh, boy.
You know how Coach Knight took his compliance test? I get it to him. Hey, Dan, I think the answer is C. Okay, yeah, B. Yeah, okay. So there's ways, I mean, but that's 20 years ago.
Yeah,
that's 25 years ago, actually. I mean,
it's a different time, yeah. Especially a high-profile coach. Here's the thing. This thing's going to come down to if they can keep it in the Shelby County courts, then they'll be fine. If it gets into federal courts, you know, odds are that Shelby County courts are not going against Penny Hardaway and not going against University of Memphis.
Can the NCAA – now, there are different things on this. There are articles in the book. I've talked to numerous people about this. And you can – remember, people have paid these things back. There are deals that
over
can
4 years,
be made.
Over 4 years, over a 4-year period.
Yeah. You can pay
you
these things back.
You can find a happy medium to this
yes,
thing.
That's what I'm asking. Is there a – do you anticipate a happy medium where Memphis, whose only concern in this instance, in my opinion, is keeping Wiseman, thus their NCAA tournament/championship Final Four hopes alive.
But then if that was their only motive – then why would you just basically tell the NCAA to just stick?
Because they got a court to agree with them. And once the court agrees with them, say, to heck with this, we're going to play it out. If you don't, let me ask you this. If you're a coach and you're Penny Hardaway, you're just coming into this, would you trust, okay, we're going to declare him ineligible. Would you trust the NCAA enough? Maybe you know what you did or you did not do. Would you trust them enough to reinstate him? Or would you ask forgiveness later instead of permission to play him?
Yeah, here's the thing is you just never know what the NCAA's mindset is.
And you don't know what they have on them.
And the NCAA usually knows the answer to the question. I mean, that's just, you know, the little bit that I've seen through what my brother went through. They know the answers to the question. So, I mean, do they have anything significant that's new? I don't know. I have no idea. But if they do, they're holding it close to their chest. And they're basically
They bring it out?
I think when it goes into a federal, if they get it to a federal judge.
So he's going to play, in your mind, and this is my thought, too. He's going to play until it gets to some different court outside of Shelby County, Tennessee.
No doubt about it. Yeah, and you know what? More power to him. Look, but here's the thing. They've got a good team with or without him. Now, obviously, they're at another level. They're the Fab Five with him. You know, Precious Achiuwa is a big physical guy that gobbles up rebounds on the defensive end. And D.J. Jeffries can slash and get to the rim and finish. And he's a very, very good passer. Boogie Ellis made six threes the other day. And, you know, Damian Ba is a tough physical guard that can really, really defend. I mean, you know, they've got a deep, athletic, talented team. A team that plays a style of basketball. They play really fast. They make you play fast. They extend their defense. Now, point guard play will be the issue. But, I mean, they're a team that will be hard to play against throughout the season and for sure in the NCAA.
Where do you put them 1 through 10 in the country?
About 5 right now.
5?
Here's the thing. I haven't seen anyone that's just blowing me away.
I agree.
I'll tell you what. We're going to make Cronin on the podcast today. But I watched Washington. Washington was as impressive as any team I've seen play. And I was at Champions. Now, they turned it over 17 times in the first half, but, you know, Jaden McDaniels, I mean, he's a freak of nature. He's a point forward at 6'9 with a 7'5 wingspan. And Isaiah Stewart is a low post dude that carves out space. They got Naz Carter, who can make shots, can really defend. They got tremendous length at the top of their zone. I mean, they're impressive. Baylor played hard. But does anyone as you're watching these games, like, you know, the other day we watched Iowa against DePaul.
DePaul is really good or Iowa's got a long way to go.
Ooh, that Iowa looked like a bad basketball team. That was uninspired.
At home.
And with not a lot of people in the stands. And you know what? That's always an issue. And DePaul looked like a team that has new life. They get Charlie Moore. Charlie Moore is obviously
terrific.
Yeah, for them, he's really, really good. And the kid Reed, I mean, the kid Paul Reed at 25-12.
Jalen Coleman Lambs or Lance Coleman. I always get
He was at Illinois, right?
He was. He was at Illinois.
Every time he shoots it, you think it's going in.
I was just
going
to say that. He is one of those lanky guys that has enough quickness to get a shot. And when he shoots it, you think he's going to make a shot. I don't know where they sit in there. I'll tell you, a team that's been pretty good is Butler. Amen. Yeah. When you look at the Gavitt games themselves, Seth.
Let's talk about Coach Gavitt.
I wanted to go play for Coach Gavitt. I'll tell you
really?
Why. Yeah,
tell me why.
I'm from Maryville, Indiana.
The great Providence coach who basically was involved with USA Basketball, started the Big East Conference, and was a great ambassador for our game. And a lot of people don't know him. His son, Dan Gavitt, obviously is oversees the NCAA tournament. A lot of people want him to be the director of the NABC. I don't think he does it. That's my opinion.
Well, if he's going to make the money that Haney's making, if I were him,
maybe he would do it.
Gavitt, I went to Catholic High School, and I saw them play and with, you'll remember, Bad News Barnes, Kevin Stakem, Ernie D.
That was my guy, Ernie D, dropping dimes.
Yeah, the whole crew. And if you want to see.
I wanted to be Ernie D.
Everybody wanted to be Ernie D in my world, Ernie D or Pistol Pete Maravich. I'm Serbian, so Pistol Pete Maravich was our guy. But if you want to watch something fun on YouTube, go back and look up Ernie D. Gregorio back in the day at Providence. So I started looking at Providence. You know, I'm a young kid. What the hell is Providence? And I've realized, wait a second, it's only about a 5,000 at that time.
About seven buildings.
Is that what it is? I didn't even know.
They got a great practice facility now, my man. Cool Ed Cool, he's killing it.
And I saw Coach Gavitt on the sidelines, and I'm like, oh, man, I'd love to go there. And, you know, but so I've always been a Providence slash Dave Gavitt fan, and for them to honor Coach Gavitt, who was he the original commissioner of the Big East?
Yes,
am I wrong about
he was,
that?
He was basically helped create the Big
East. He created, you know, Pearl Washington. Well, Pearl did Pearl's thing, but he was, you know, Pearl and Mullen and Ewing and all those guys.
He had a vision, getting that group of schools together, because they were all playing independent, or the ECAC, and getting those schools together and getting them kind of where they had, you know, kind of a shared vision of what they wanted to be. And, you know, a lot of them obviously were the parochial schools throughout the northeastern United States, with some private schools like Syracuse and things of that nature.
They hit lightning in a bottle. ESPN, Ewing goes to Georgetown. Mullen goes to St. John's. Walter Berry ends up at St. John's. Pearl Washington ends up. Derek Coleman. I mean, they hit it
And then they had a home run. And think of the coaches. They had Lou Carnesecca and Jim Boeheim and John Thompson and P.J. Carlissimo.
They had coaches.
Roy Massimino. They had personalities.
They did. The whole thing. So the Gavitt Games is basically the Big Ten against the Big East.
Yep. And let me ask you this. Michigan, they have good veteran players back. Xavier Simpson, John Teske, Levers.
Yeah, no question.
I mean, they've got legitimate dudes back. I mean, how good are they?
All right, here's the deal with them, because I don't think Creighton's great. I think Creighton's just okay. You know what? It's not going to be John Beilein. It's Juwan Howard. I think they have a great leader in Xavier Simpson. I think Xavier Simpson might be leader of the year. Like, he does everything you want. But I think they're a little loose. I looked at them. They got up a little bit. Who are they playing? They were up 30. Next thing you know, it's 5. They get a little loose, and they're not talented enough. Like, if you look at what John Beilein was able to do.
They got veteran dudes, though. I mean, like, how good is Brooks? How good is Livers?
Brooks has had big games. Livers lost weight.
How good is
Castleton? Is a kid that's going to help. Simpson's terrific. Teske is very good. But I'm just telling you. They don't have yet I watch them and I don't see a veteran team. I see a team that's arriving to be veterans right now. Does that make sense to you? Like, when you have a bunch of veterans, it's not, hey, it's only November. Like, when you got a young team, like, you know, I saw you say that on Twitter to somebody about Florida State. Florida got
whipped. November,
you're like,
man.
Relax.
November.
But sometimes when you have an older team.
You're paying attention.
I always pay attention. Seth on Hoops. They are not. For all the veterans, they don't look like a polished veteran club, but maybe that's because they got a new coach and a whole new system.
Oh, it is. It's a whole new system.
Sure.
So basically, you know, everything is new to them.
Everything. Including the coach.
If this group came back and Coach Beilein was still there, there was a familiarity that they would have, and they would have a comfort zone. And they're going to have a comfort zone, but it takes time because it might be different terminology.
Can I give you my team of the week?
Team of the week?
Yeah.
Not Winthrop.
Should be. Nicholls State.
Nicholls State almost beat Illinois.
Overtime
and
with
beat
Illinois.
Beat Pitt.
You know how hard it is.
You know who my team of the week is?
Who?
I'll tell you what. It's the fiery head coach at UCLA. The fighting UCLA Bruins, Karen Greenberg's alma mater.
Why are they
because
your team?
Because Mick Cronin has taken the time out of his busy schedule from holding Bill Walton's hand to be with us.
Hey, Mick, Bill Walton said,
what's up, Doc?
when you were up 41-37, Bill Walton on the air said it's an insurmountable lead.
That's how much confidence he has in Ben Cronin.
Did you feel it to be insurmountable when you're up 41-37 against Cal Santa Barbara?
Let's just say I would like to feel the way Bill Walton feels at times.
Hey, there are places that you can do that.
Especially in California.
Hey, Mick, what is the biggest surprise for you with the UCLA job? I mean, you grew up basketball guy, your dad basketball guy. It's UCLA, man. What's the biggest either, I don't know, I want to say, you know, surprise, disappointment, whatever. What has kind of surprised you about it?
I had no idea. I had never been on campus. I had been to Pauley, but you know, come in. You know how it is, Dan. You come in on a loading dock, you play, and you leave. So I didn't realize how nice our campus is. I mean, the school. I knew it was a great place. You know, everybody said, you know, UCLA, it's great. But until you get here, and I'm sitting here talking to you guys, and sun's beaming through my office, and I got palm trees outside my office. Mm. And now I know why 130,000 kids applied to school here last year.
It's the, like that, prettiest
that would
campus
be,
in college.
It's, you would know, Seth. Dan, have you been here?
Yeah, I went out there, and I loved it, and I didn't want to leave. But I spent most of my time, even though I'm married, my wife understood, searching for Jennifer Aniston.
That's what Mike Bray told me, to look for her and make sure I call him if I found it.
I will say this. Your assistant, Mike Lewis, sent me a picture, because Alford and I used to say, Steve, man, you know. Well, apparently Mike, his first week there, was across the street from an opening of a movie of hers. He took a picture and sent it to me. He goes, there you go.
There you go. He walked to dinner and you saw Jennifer Aniston. So those are nice perks of the job here.
So Mick, getting to your team, what was the biggest thing about your team that surprised you? And I'm not into, we're going to change the culture, but how long did it take for them to understand the expectation you had for them?
Yeah, it's just different. You know, you and I have talked, we laugh. It's like everybody goes to a press conference and says that they're going to change the culture. Sometimes the guy won 31 games the year before, yep. And they go to the press conference and they say they're going to change it. You know, I think we're all different. You know, Steve had his way here. You got to be who you are. I think when I got my first head coaching job at Murray State, Rick Pitino and I were at his house in Miami, and he said, look, you don't try to be me. And we talked about it. He said, you know, I worked for Hubie. You got to be yourself. And, you got to remember, first of all, you got to remember you're not me. You hadn't won a national championship. You're at the time, I think I was 29 years old. So you got to be yourself. You know what, Coach, to answer your question, I think have they adjusted? Sure. But I guess from a coaching standpoint, you guys know, until what we're doing is second nature to us, that's the hard part for me, because they're trying to do everything that we're teaching, but it's still not second nature, because you know they haven't been in our system for that long of a period of time, and it is very different. You know, our defensive commitment is a little bit different than what they're used to. Our rebounding has probably the thing that we've adjusted to the most because of our size and length. If we don't turn it over and we actually, you know, run a little offense, we're a really good rebounding team. So, and we got a lot of young players. That's another thing. So I've relied heavily on Prince Ali to try to give us some leadership.
And he's been good. I'll tell you, the other night, I thought he changed the whole game to start of the second half. I thought he was really active defensively.
Yeah, you know, like I told him, look, you got to lead us. You don't have to lead us in scoring, but you have to lead us to victory. It's just so hard with kids. Nowadays, look, I don't want to get off on it, but everybody thinks college is a joke now. You know, you watch AAU, you watch high school. Nobody says, hey, boy, that guy could play at UCLA. Like when I was growing up, like that was like, you know, wow, one day I could play at UCLA or, you know, Rocket Rod Foster. I mean, things like that. Now everybody's a pro. Everybody's a pro. And they don't realize how hard it is to play college basketball. I mean, it's, you know, Zion Williamson's, he's one in a million. You know, the rest of these guys, like for Tiger Campbell, he's a hell of a player, but he's a freshman. I mean, it's the Lonzo Ball don't come along very often. So it's just harder than they really understand. And we're a team that won we're 17. They think they were 17-16 last year, and our three leading scorers, our leading assist guy, and our leading rebounder, they all put their name in a draft. So we're going to be a work in progress. But the guys are trying. It's just how soon can it, what we're asking them to do, become second nature to them? That's the big question for us.
You know, Mick, I think fans always think, man, one win, we're here, or two, you know. But for you coming into something like UCLA, this is a season-long deal, is it not?
Yeah, you know that. It's going to be. I mean, it's just going to be, and that's what I told the guys. I mean, we've got to establish ourselves that we're hard to play against. That's what I have to accomplish this year. Now, sure, I want to win every game, absolutely. But we've got to make sure that we establish the fact that when you play UCLA, okay, they're going to be physical. They're going to take you out of your offense. They're not easily scored upon. And you're going to have to block them out when the shot goes up, because we can control those things. We're going to do our damnedest to execute and make open shots. And if we do, we'll win a lot of games. If we can get some of our young guys comfortable and confident, and we learn how to get each other shots, and we understand that that's really what offensive basketball is about. You got to get each other shots through movement, cutting, screening, passing, not just watching one guy dribble and shoot, you know, which is, you know, prevailing thought in summer ball. But it's just going to be. But it's going to be a work in progress. It's not going to be a 1 week thing, because you know, we've done it two games. We're far from where we need to be, and then as the competition gets stiffer, then you find out who you really are. You know, when you get in there and you get in the ring against somebody, can really punch you in the face.
I'm interested. You know, I haven't coached a while. Seth's been out of it a little bit, and things change. How easy or how difficult is it to get the modern kid to play physical basketball?
I think it's a great question, because people would always say to me, you recruit these tough guys. Like, people would want to call me and give me a guy that can't dribble or shoot, but he's a tough guy, and he looks like he should play tight end in the NFL.
Right.
So, well, you know, Gary Clark wasn't the world's toughest guy when he came to Cincinnati. I mean, he's from a small town in North Carolina. He's probably the second best fisherman in Clayton. Yeah, now, he had a lot of heart, and over 4 years, we trained him and worked with him every day. That's why it's important to have a great coaching staff. And he became that guy that everybody thought was the toughest guy in the American Conference. And he won Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and Sportsman of the Year. Now, so it takes time. They all don't come in that way. So I think you can definitely do it. Some guys, it's easier. You know, certain guys, you can just see. You can see when you watch them play. I mean, they just got it in them. You know, like, but true toughness is getting the job done. It's not throwing elbows now. You know, toughness is not blowing assignments, not getting tired, not giving in to fatigue, concentrating and executing, being tough enough to find the open man. Not, you know, it's soft having your head down and getting rattled. So I think it's a skill, but it's, some guys are born with it, but other guys, it takes some time to adjust to the toughness you have to be successful at this level. Because at this level, the 900 transfers a year, it's so much older. College basketball, because of all the transfers, is getting older. The red shirts in eighth grade, the 900 transfers a year, the prep schools, it's, you're playing against 22, 23-year-old guys, and it's tough for 18-year-old kids.
Now, UCLA has a little history to it. They eat their own. I mean, like, you know, basically their expectation, and, you know, obviously one of the guys who eats his own is Bill, and that he's on those games. He's, you know, he's involved. He loves it. Those guys are passionate. What have you done to win those guys over? Because you know what? Winning those guys over is no different than winning recruits over. I mean, you've got to get all of the UCLA family on the same page, sharing the same vision that you have. So what have you done to get those guys on your side? And then, you know, the next aspect, obviously, you want to be able to own LA in recruiting. What have you been able to do to kind of make inroads?
Well, you got to spend time with people. So it's been an eventful, and it's been fun. It's been eventful, but it's just been fun getting a chance to become friends with Michael Warren. The guy's just, he's a tremendous person. And whether it's Bill Walton, Kareem, Don McLean's talked to our team. Guys, you know, obviously Russell Westbrook, Aaron Afalo, the Ware twins. He's had so many guys that have addressed our team, Tracy Murray, Ryan Hollins. So, you know, just from all different eras. My message to those guys is we got to stay together. You're not going to win every game. You know, and these
they don't understand it because some of those dudes did.
Yeah, and that's the hard thing. You know, the hard thing. I know, Dan, you're a Cubs fan, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Did you read what Joe Maddon, I try to read what managers say, you know, not that I'm loving baseball, but he made a statement at the end of his tenure in Chicago. He said, the mind once stretched has trouble returning to its original form. And look, the mind's got stretched at UCLA. You won 10 titles in 11 years. So minds were stretched. And it was I thought it was an unbelievably profound statement. And extremely true. So, but I think time has gone by. We're at a point now that people realize here how great of a job Ben Hallen did. I think that's now a prevailing thought of, man, you know, Ben really did do a great job. And when he left here, the team he left had six guys that played in the NBA that he left when he left here. That four of them are still playing in the NBA. So I think, you know, maybe time and experience has helped the mind get back to a normal form. But, hey, I'm like our fans now. I mean, you know, I'd like to try to compete for the national championship. I mean, that's part of my decision to come here is opportunity and recruiting. You know, being able to recruit four and five star guys that have an open mind to come into play at UCLA, because obviously you're at a great campus and you have the great tradition, and you know Bel Air's across the street and Beverly Hills is on the corner, so you know there's opportunity here.
I tell you, you go out to California, you've become like Aristotle now. I mean, like you're quoting, like, I mean, it's unbelievable.
You like it? You like that?
I'll tell you one thing, that's impressive.
Coach Dockett, you like the Joe Maddon quote.
I love the Joe Maddon quote. I was looking at Seth's bald head right across from me, and I'm thinking, man, if that brain expanded, where would it go? And I'm thinking, right?
Wait a second. I don't have that dust on the top of my head, bro. I mean, like.
I got the dust.
Hey, your guy, you're going to coach your guys hard. You're going to demand. Have people tried to use that against you in recruiting?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, it's almost now. It's almost now. Hey, he's going to coach her. He's going to actually coach.
Right.
You know, it's like that's a negative.
Right.
You know, but what I do when we bring a recruit in is so I have different, you know, a lot of friends in the NBA. If Bob Myers was the main guy that probably hired me, along with Josh Rebholz, and Dan Guerrero was, you know, he had conveyed to me that his retirement was imminent. Neil O'Shea is one of my closest friends. Runs the Trailblazer. So I'll pull out a play sheet, and you guys know the NBA. They have 77 plays with 40 counters.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they do, and they have seven different ways they cover the pick and roll. They don't, you know, they're versus a, you know, certain college teams, they play it the same way every time. So. Yeah, but you're right. People try to use the fact that you're actually coach against you, which is actually extremely comical, because when you go to the pros, you're going to have to be able to retain information and understand strategy and have a knowledge of the game. As you guys know, the higher up you go in the game, the more mental it becomes. So, but you're right. No, people will try to use it. Hey, so we're going to let you do whatever you want. That stuff's out there. I mean, you hear everything in recruiting. I mean, it just is what it is. It's never going to change. But it is almost like a negative. He's going to coach, but it's like, well, you don't think that Nick Nurse coaches the Raptors? I mean, they changed their whole defense on the airplane to L.A. to play against Kawhi Leonard and trapped him every time last night. I don't know if you guys watched any of it. I mean, it was unbelievable. They trapped him literally almost every time he touched the ball. So you got to be able to adjust – You're not just going to be able to run up and down. You guys know that. But, hey, recruiting is what it is. That's why you don't get overpaid like us, but you don't have to deal with that stuff.
I'm way overpaid to do this stuff, sitting here and talk to great people. Hey, let me ask you about recruiting. Cincinnati, I always felt this way. I always felt that there was a real loyalty in and around Cincinnati among the basketball community to the University of Cincinnati. I don't know why I felt that, Mick, but I felt that going back a long, long time. Difference, Cincinnati, and now you're in L.A., a little more open, guys are going everywhere, you got USC in there. What's the biggest difference? What's the biggest change?
I think you're right about that. The problem with that in Cincinnati was that's within the 275 loop.
Right.
Because outside of there, you're in Big Ten country for the most part. Mm-hmm. And if you went south, you're in Kentucky. Good luck there. Louisville can't even beat them. So, and they're in the ACC. So, and they sell out 22,000 every night. So, you know, that loyalty was real there. Here, the entire West Coast, it's just not as polluted with top 50 programs. I mean, just statistically, if the ACC, the Big East, the Big Ten, the SEC are all, for the most part, east of the Mississippi. You know, and then the Big 12 is in the Plains. So out here, I mean, there's only so many Power 5 schools. I mean, there's 12 of them. You know, now Gonzaga's obviously a good, you know, really an elite program. And some others have done really, really well. But at the end, it's just a numbers game. Now, you know, in L.A., hey, Snoop Dogg said it, man, when Kawhi signed with the Clippers. He said, slow down the hierarchy of basketball in his tweet. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. He had the Lakers 1, UCLA 2. he had like the Sparks 3, the Drew League 4. I mean, he put the Clippers down like 7. Snoop, I guess he's a big Lakers fan. But they could end up both playing in the Western Conference Finals this year. But, yeah, it's a big city, Dan. I mean, it's so much different. It's so vastly different here. There's so many players. The key, you don't want to miss the next Kawhi Leonard is really, you know, my thing is, like, you know, trying to get out. Can we get out enough? Actually trying to practice during the winter, we're going to practice in the morning, which is going to help us. We're going to practice at 9. That allows my staff and I to get out to more high school games. And practices, because you don't want to miss. You got Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. We're both from, you know, I think, wouldn't Seth Paul from Paul, is he from Palmdale?
Yep. George is.
Yep.
You know, so I mean, that's an hour, and obviously
Ryan Russell was from San Bernardino. The only other scouts we have besides Long Beach State was Cal State San Bernardino.
Yeah, he springboarded the great career of Seth Greenberg, Coach Dockett. Yeah.
Should have stayed a little more solid when Michael pushed him off, though. That's a little more solid. A little more solid. Come on.
But
you're not getting that call.
Here's the one thing that is going to be in your advantage. And I think that you and I always talk about it, Dan. The most important part of recruiting, and this is the least understood part of recruiting, is evaluating.
Mm-hmm.
Having assistant coaches that actually watch guys play and don't listen to the gurus. Having assistant coaches that can kind of see what I call evaluate up. You know, you're going to be wrong sometimes, but evaluate up. Now, you're going to have to recruit the best players, and you'll probably be able to recruit nationally because of those four letters, because those four letters are pretty powerful. But you have a veteran staff that understands how to look at a player and evaluate who can play for you also.
Well, I just think winning gets lost in recruiting. You know, you can win recruiting rankings, and you can win media hype. You better win, you better win games. Like, you better win when the season starts. That's when you. So there, I mean, it's a profound statement. You know, the guys you recruit are the guys that show up, and I think it's a Yogi Berra statement. But when you really think about it. I don't care where a guy's ranked. If all he can do is run and jump and he shows up and you say, well, this guy can't shoot, he can't pass. Well, you recruited him. That's the guy you recruited could run and jump. Now you can't, when he shows up, you can't think he can pass and shoot. So, you know, you got to know who you're getting. I totally agree with you. Evaluating is everything. You know, at Cincinnati, it was hard for us to get elite skill. So we had a choice. Get guys that were not really good at anything, or get guys who were really hard workers with character and toughness that we thought we could develop into winners. Now we did, you know, I knew Kyle Washington could score when he transferred. I knew Jacob Evans had elite skill. I knew Sean Kilpatrick was a scorer, but with other guys, it was, if it came down to it, we were going to try to go with toughness and character and guys we knew would play to win. So that's a skill. I mean, it just is. I think that's probably the most underrated skill when evaluating players. You know, will the guy play to win? You know, Bob Huggins taught me that. There's two kind of players: guys that help you win and guys that don't. And defending is a skill. Thinking is a skill in basketball. Passing is a skill. Making your teammates better is a skill. Being coachable, skill. So I think it's too much of that gets lost in evaluation, to be honest with you.
I agree with you, Mick. You're the best. I appreciate you coming
Great
on
stuff,
and hanging
Coach.
On us. As usual, we'll have to do this more often, especially in the change of time, the three-hour difference.
Hey, Dan, you back on the radio yet, man?
Took a week off.
Why didn't you come see me, brother? You should have come out. Mike Lewis with us. You could have stayed at Mike's house.
I would have loved to, but
I had a new hip.
Now. I couldn't fly, so it my suspension coincided with a new hip, so it all worked out well.
Oh, see, that's all those loose ball drills from Coach Knight.
I blame him for everything, Mick. I blame him for my hair loss. I blame him for everything, Mick. Hey, man, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Mick, you're the best,
Thanks
man. Stay in touch,
guys.
Brother.
We'll catch up.
All right, buddy.
All right, buddy. That's Mick Cronin. It's the world's greatest podcast. All right, let me ask you this, Seth. What is a reasonable expectation for UCLA this year? And then let's go 2 years down the road, year three in the Mick Cronin era. What's reasonable? Not UCLA reasonable.
I think reasonable is making the NCAA.
This year?
Yeah, this year. I think it's reasonable. Again, as I look in college basketball, I'm not sure anyone has jumped out. Now, the Pac-12 is going to be really deep.
Not bad.
I mean, Oregon State had a good win the other day.
For all Arizona's problems, man.
Arizona is really good.
Yeah.
Those three freshmen are as good as any three freshmen I've seen.
And all the nonsense from the trial and all that, that's fine. But on the court, they just whooped up on Illinois. And Illinois, in the Big Ten, is supposed to be kind of the it team. You know what I mean? Not the best team, but the up-and-coming, hey, look, Underwood now, third year, DeSumo, you got Georgie, you got these guys. They got whipped in McCombs.
The big fella, Kofi Cockburn, is
cool.
That is a large human being.
When you look at the Pac-12.
I think the Pac-12 is going to get six teams in the tournament. I think USC is going to get in the tournament. I think UCLA can get in the tournament. Washington's going to get in the tournament.
Can Oregon State
get in the tournament? I think Oregon State. I think the
son of
the
coach is pretty good.
Oh, he can play.
He can shoot it, Trinkle.
He can really shoot it. Yeah, Trinkle. I'll tell you what. But Arizona, Nico Mannion, Josh Green, and Zeke Nagy.
You got your damn notes there. Put your glasses on. Yeah. I mean, you can't see.
Zeke Nagy. That dude is really good. He's
6'11", what I'm saying then is, where can they be?
I think they make the NCAA tournament. I think seven teams will go from that league, and I think that in 3 years, I think they'll have a team that can be a second weekend team.
At what point at UCLA, and I've actually talked to Brad Stevens about this at Boston with the Celtics. I mean, he walks in, he sees 26 championships or whatever there is up there. I mean, at what point?
They're playing pretty good right now.
They're very good. At what point do you gotta get to a Final Four when you're at UCLA or in Boston? Do you gotta win a championship? Those places are crazy.
Here's the deal. It's hard to get to the Final Four, but at UCLA, look at the history. They eat their own. I mean, it's just the way it is.
No, you said that to me.
And so I think in year five, he's gotta be knocking on the Elite Eight at least, or those people will be losing their minds. Cause they're doing more now. I mean, they're chartering now that he has access to play-ins. They're in the practice facility now. They've done things to conduct their business. It's my whole favorite line. Investment's got to equal your expectation. Well, you know what? UCLA's investment didn't equal their expectation for a really long time. Now they've started to up their investment and conduct their businesses like the Dukes and the Carolinas and the Kentuckys and the Kansases, the Oregons, the Gonzagas, because they weren't even conducting their business like that. I mean,
Mark
to Steve Alford
told me, when he was offered the Indiana job, when they hired Calvin Sampson in, 2006, He said, Dan, this is before they had Cook Hall at Indiana. He goes, we were at the Final Four. I said, Mark, did you ever anticipate turning down $1.5 million a year, which is what he was offered, to coach basketball at Indiana? Because he was a school teacher. Right. He said, Dan, I got a better job. Yeah. He goes, I got better facilities. He goes, we fly everywhere. He goes, we just beat him in the tournament. He goes, I don't need to leave, and I don't need all you crazy people at Indiana sending me emails and writing letters on my house. Yeah. I don't need it.
Yeah, exactly. So you're right. But Mick did need, all right, and look, he loves Cincinnati. You know, he's a Cincinnati guy.
Yeah, yeah. Woodward,
his dad was right there. I mean, it was great. You know, every time you did a Cincinnati game, you could hang out with his dad, who his dad was great talking ball with. But it gets to the point where he needed a new challenge, and this will be the ultimate challenge. And
this is make or break.
I'm not saying
you can't get another job. Alford's at Nevada. But this is make or break.
Coach, what he's getting paid and what he's made.
I'm not saying financially make or break. I'm not saying.
Yeah, but no. Like, here's the deal. Either you will meet expectations.
Become in the upper echelon and be a national champion.
Or the job will eat you.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll break you down. I mean, it's the way it is. But you know what? Today, most jobs are like that.
I think our jobs are like every job.
I mean, every job. The guy, football coach at Arkansas, 2 years, boom, out. You know, Willie Taggart, boom, 2 years, out. I mean, here's the deal. You got to win. And all these presidents that are sitting on their high horses, if you're winning, they're going to go, you know what? All right, we'll wait and see what happens with the FBI investigation. We'll weather the storm. We're going to take on the NCAA. So, like, you know, as long as you're winning at a high level, it is amazing. Those academicians that sit at the top of the hill, they just want you to win so they can take that money and reinvest it in the university and use your team as an opportunity. Now, if you're on the bottom line too many days in a row, that's the problem.
The
bottom line will get you.
The ticker.
The bottom line will get you fired. Rick Pitino. If you could have stayed off the bottom line, he would have been all right.
Rick Pitino, I want to get your thought on this. Coaching the Greek national team.
He's trying to do anything he can, want to be associated with a team, and number two, because he wants to show he can coach adults so that people can finally understand that even though he was a different coach a long time ago, he can transition to coaching.
Would you coach a national team against the United States?
My brother coached Canadian.
That's not you.
Yeah.
You would?
Yeah, why not?
I don't know. I've always thought I would never want to do that.
Well, I mean, like, here's my thing. And here is USA Basketball. You know, when I got out of coaching 7 years ago.
That's been 7 years?
Yeah. 7 years ago, I called Jim Boeheim and said, you know, love to do anything with USA Basketball. Like, you know, be a court coach and here, do this. You know, I had 400 wins. I beat a couple of teams. I had a little bit of success. Well, you can't do that because unless you're a high school coach or currently a college coach, you can't have any affiliation with USA Basketball. So you know what? If USA Basketball doesn't want me, I'm out for hire.
That's different, right? Hey, Dockage, I'll go Greenberg and Dockage. We'll take, I don't know, if you are somebody that controls basketball in some small country somewhere, we will take your team and qualify it for the Olympics.
Exactly.
Or we'll give the money back.
I don't know about that.
All right, it's Seth Greenberg, Dan Dockage, and it's going to sound a little different because, well, quite frankly, we taped the first half of this podcast at ESPN, and now we are back in our excess at ESPN. I'm back in the studio in Indianapolis, but Seth, let's recap a little bit of the Gavitt games. First, VCU and LSU. VCU got the win at home. And you and I talking off air, we dug the fan base at VCU, no?
Yeah, I did. I thought, you know, you think about everything that's gone on in college basketball the last few years, the FBI investigation and everything that's gone along with that and the different hearings. But, you know, no group has made a greater statement about the travesty of what has happened in college basketball than the VCU fans. I mean, if you think about it, the VCU fans statement last night, the manner in which they were dressed, the number of different signs, basically made a statement and said, you know what? We know what is happening. It's here right in front of us. It potentially maybe even happened on our own campus. But the statement they made regarding LSU and regarding their former coach, Will Wade, was significant, dramatic, impactful. I thought ESPN did a really good job of documenting it. But the reality is their statement was far greater than even the administration at LSU.
Well, the administration at LSU let the coach hang out and fired the
fired the athletic director. I mean, LSU showed what they are about, I think, and you let a guy, Will Wade, stay. Good for – and people forget Will Wade coached at VCU, right? I mean, Will Wade was a VCU
guy. Yeah, he coached 2 years at VCU,
And left a mess.
Assistant coach at Shaka Smart. And, you know, the interesting thing about the game, so they made a statement there. Then they made a statement on the court because under Will Wade, VCU got away from habit. They got away from their culture. They got away from their toughness. I think they were 214th in defensive turnover percentage. Mike Rhodes comes in. Mike Rhodes is a career coach. Mike Rhodes is a guy that – cut his teeth and worked his way up the coaching profession. He has an interesting system because they play havoc in the full court and a little bit more pack line in the half court. But last year, eighth in the country in turnover percentage on the defensive end. I mean, those dudes were flying. I'm talking about flying around all over the court. And, you know, they play hard. They have great trust. They shot it much better than they've shot it recently. VCU is a hard-playing team. That is difficult. I'm not really difficult to match up with Marcos Santos Silva. Let me tell you something. That's a throwback front court dude. A throwback front court dude just puts a body on you, rebounds the ball, finishes around the basket, doesn't try to do anything he can't do. They forced 26 turnovers as a team. I mean, they were flying around. And here's the other thing that's crazy to me. You know you're playing VCU. You know they're back to their culture and their identity. And identity is a big thing to me. All right. How can you not be more prepared to deal with that pressure? Being you were part of that system way back with Shaka Smart. I thought it was an interesting game and a great win for VCU.
I did too. I thought it was really good. I got to ask you because I was watching the game and I was kind of flipping back and forth. Ohio State was playing a little bit at the same time and we're going to get into Ohio State. Who was the announcers on the game? You know,
my man Spitola and Tommy Hart. Stats.
Spitola was absolutely great in documenting the Wiseman thing. And he made the comment that if you don't have rules, you have, or if you don't have, if you have rules and the membership aren't going to follow the rules, then you have chaos. And I want to say, man, Chris Spitola was absolutely fantastic during that game, documenting that. And he couldn't be more right. We've talked at length about Wiseman and the whole deal. And now it looks like Wiseman and Penny Hardaway are going to forfeit their high school championship. And it's a total mess. It's an indictment of college basketball where we're at with it. The more I see of this Penny Hardaway thing lying under oath and all that kind of stuff, or at least according to the commercial appeal, documenting that he wasn't forthcoming under oath. But anyway, having said that, I thought they did a great job and they deserve
to be. Stats was great.
They deserve to be cursed. Ohio State, Villanova. Ohio State to me, I don't think the Big Ten's very good. I watched Purdue last night. They were awful in the second half.
17 points in the second half.
Yeah. But Ohio State is very, very good. And it was one of those games. I just got off the phone with the staff at Ohio State and it was one of those games where you don't see this very often, Seth. You had a few of them. I had a few of them. It was highlight after highlight. It was not only a good play. They got off 19-3, and made a bunch of shots, but there was never a time when Villanova was going to make a comeback. So I'm going to ask you this. Number one, I know everybody points to Villanova got their brains beat out last year in this at home and okay, fine. But they had two pros last year at Villanova. Is Villanova a legitimate top 20 team? Because after watching that last night, I don't know where Villanova gets really good other than they have a terrific coach and a great culture, Seth.
Yeah, I think they're going to get better. I mean, here's the deal.
Better,
they're still young.
But
Jeremiah Robinson.
Yeah, I know
Jeremiah
all that.
Robinson.
I know, but can they get really
the
good? Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. Like last year, they won the Big East after getting thwarted. Can they do that this year?
Yeah, I think they can because basically, they're starting two freshmen. Brian Anton will end up being an impact player. He's still waiting to get cleared probably after Thanksgiving is what we're hearing now. Jeremiah Robinson Earl is going to be a really good player. I think a little bit overwhelmed by an experienced physical, Ohio State team, but they've got enough pieces. I mean, yeah, they lost Phil Booth. They lost Pascal.
Right.
Pascal's playing really, really well, for the Golden State Warriors because they need players, the Warriors, but yeah, I think they'll get better. Here's the thing, before we get into Ohio State, I do agree with you on Ohio State, but fans of college basketball, this is Seth Greenberg. Please pay attention. Take notes because this is very important to listen to. All right. It is November. It is actually early in November. It is the third week of November. So if you're a freshman that's on your team that was a McDonald's All-American, is it fulfilling your expectation? Please put sharp objects down. All right. It's November. It's in the middle of November. He will get better. There is a process. College basketball isn't as easy as it looks on TV for these guys. There's a learning curve, learning how to play hard, learning how to prepare. All right. The intensity of the game, all that. Oh, by the way. And if your team actually lost a game in November or two, all right, here's the deal. It's a long season and your team will not be today where it's going to be 3 weeks from now, a month from now, after winter break when the players don't have classes. Teams will get better. And oh, by the way, fans of college basketball, please pay attention. Keep your pen close to your hand. If your team has a great win, congratulations. But you know what? If your team gets seduced by that great win, a la what happened with Kentucky, and doesn't understand that you've got to continue to get better, you've got to work hard, that every game is a separate entity, your team will not get better. And then you will be miserable come February and March. End of statement.
All right, I agree with all that. And I think that sounds good. But I will say this. There are some teams that just aren't that good. Like I'm watching last night and I'm watching Villanova and I'm saying to myself, all right, how good can, like last year I thought, oh, look, Gillespie's good. You mentioned Pascal Booth. All right, these guys are good. It'll be fine. And I talked to Jay Wright last year and it's like, yeah, we needed this. You know, we won the national championship. I'm watching them last night saying to myself, who's the guy? Gillespie's the guy. Who's the guy? And I'm not sure. Hey, Seth, I think you understand this really well. Sometimes you splat. You don't always bounce back. Sometimes you splat. Sometimes you're not rubber. Sometimes you boom. I don't know. I'm just saying, Seth.
I think that Jeremiah Robinson Earl is going to end up in January very, very good front court player. I have that feeling. I think the kid Moore is going to end a high basketball IQ, comes from a winning culture in high school.
Yeah.
I think he will end up a good player. I think that Sadiq Bey was awful yesterday. Sadiq Bey is the guy, quite honestly, that has to have the breakthrough for them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean,
Sadiq Bey is a guy that has a chance to be a really good player. So it'll be interesting to watch. I think they still have a shot.
All right.
Let's go to your boy, Ohio State now. Seth, I got a question.
Yeah.
I mean, are they Final Four national? Are their guards as deep and as good as any guards in the country?
When I talk to the great Andrew Dockich and all the assistants at Ohio State, you know what they tell me about DJ Carton? He's a one and done. Now, I've told them today, they asked me what I thought, and I said, look, I think he plays too upright. I think the great Pete Newell told me this one time as I was driving him around Bloomington, Indiana. He said, Dan, remember this. Great little point guards make people disappear in traffic. And when you watch a guy like Isaiah Thomas, the good Isaiah Thomas, not this Isaiah Thomas, the good Isaiah Thomas, when you watch him go to the rim, everybody disappear. When you watch great point guards, they disappear. DJ Carton got his shot blocked three times last night because he plays too upright. But everybody tells me, and he's a fantastic highlight athlete, that he is a great player. They're playing two point guards. You and I had a long conversation.
I love two point guards.
Yeah, and CJ Walker is terrific. He's bad in transition, and this is disturbing. You know, to me, I had a kid named Brandon Pardon. You probably, I'm sure, had point guards where when they're in transition, you sit back and you go, damn, I can't wait to see how we get a layup out of this because the guy's so clever. That's not CJ Walker, but CJ Walker was great. Seth, I'm telling you this right now. Best hands in college basketball that I have seen is Caleb Wesson. Best defender as a big guy that I have seen this year. It's early. You made that statement and you're right, is Caleb Wesson. He's always in the right spot. Remember, they beat Villanova last night without Andre Wesson, who's arguably their most sensible perimeter player and their best perimeter defender. I don't know if they're national championship good, but I know this. They put on the best performance I have seen all year, and I'm including the Champions Classic. I'm including Kentucky. I'm including Michigan State, Duke, whoever you want to talk about, that I have seen all year long. And I'll tell you something, last thing about DJ Carton. DJ Carton is cocky. DJ Carton is tough. DJ Carton believes he's the best player on the floor, and that ain't going to change no matter who they play. So I think they have a chance to win the Big Ten and go very deep in the NCAA tournament. That's a hell of an right there, Seth. Hey, Seth, can I give one piece of gambling advice?
Yeah, of course. I mean, as much as you
always want. Bet the damn over in professional basketball. Nobody's guarding anybody in the NBA. Bet the over. Go ahead, Seth. I'm sorry.
Especially in November.
Oh my God, the NBA is a joke. It looks like me playing in the Glen Park School, Gary, Indiana, 35th and Broadway. Who's guarding who? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You scored. You scored back then.
In high school, I was, you know. I can go get it.
Big time scorer?
Big time.
But you weren't even allowed to shoot in college.
No, I know. Had to throw it to Alford. I'm bitter. I'm bitter.
You are bitter. And Alford still has his hair, which probably you're just as bitter at. Because you had a big flowing locks.
What do you think of Ohio State?
I think you're getting out of that one quick.
Yes.
I think Ohio State, I think they're really good. I think they have the DNA right now of teams that have competed and gone to the Final Four. They've got enough experience. They've got enough toughness. They do have some young players that have a chance to grow during the course of the season. They have guard play. They don't turn it over, and they are really good defensively. And I'll tell you the other thing I like about him. I like Chris Holtman's approach, and I'm not saying he's Brad Stevens, but he's got a Brad Stevens slash Tony Dungy approach in that he's demanding. He's got a quiet intensity about him. It seems like his team enjoys playing and plays without fear, but is really tough and's got a little edge to him. So that's, you're closer to that situation than I am, but that's what I get from this, the coaching aspect, which is really important in navigating a long season.
Seth, I couldn't agree more. I think you're absolutely spot on with that. I do. I think he has all those same qualities. He's tough, but not crazy. He's not afraid to coach guys. You go to a practice, it's all business. You go to a film session, it's all teaching. I think you're absolutely right, Seth. I really do. And let's go to Purdue real quick. You ready? How bad were they in the second half, Seth?
Let me tell you something. I could not believe how inept they were in the second half.
Yeah.
But on both sides, too.
Oh, both sides. Yeah.
Defensively, focus, attention to detail, dealing with the moment. Very unlike, and I'm a huge, I think Matt Painter's not good. I think he's great.
Me too.
And I think he's got a lot of the same traits that Chris has. But you look at it, and I had the same kind of feeling that I had when I watched Michigan State in Champions. Right. Unless they're coming off staggers or flying around or whatever, which eventually, that stuff is great until you get into league play or until people take you out of what you're trying to do. Cause people don't let you run what you want to run. Good teams don't, at least. Who's making plays for them?
That's a great point.
Who gets a bucket for them?
Man, I was hoping there. I was thinking that Wheeler.
Ogell Eastern, you thought maybe?
No,
I don't know.
No.
I mean,
can't make a shot. Wheeler, I did think. I had Wheeler at this point in his career. Maybe it'll come because the metamorphosis of Purdue. Purdue with Konzo Martin and the big dog, number one pick in the draft, went to James Madison when they were into the final or Elite Eight and lost. I mean, got thumped. So the metamorphosis of Purdue is offensively and defensively. When you said this earlier, and it's so true, when Christmas comes, and you get a chance to really be with your team and really coach them. That's the metamorphosis. But Seth, I'm watching last night. I would have thought Aaron Wheeler would be averaging 12 to 15, 18 by now. He's averaging about 8. They're not throwing the ball enough into the post. They don't have perimeter shooting from Hunter. Isaiah Thompson's a, freshman, PJ's brother. He can shoot it, but he hasn't. Seth, let me ask you this. Let me go deeper in this. Do you like the Big Ten?
The Big Ten is getting off to a Pac-12 type start this year.
Yes.
I mean, we killed the Pac-12 a year ago for not being able to win a game that they needed to win. And right now, there's a big game tonight. Michigan State, Seton Hall. I don't think Miles Powell's going to play, which obviously could impact, but Seton Hall at home is a tough, hard playing team that's hard to prepare for. This will be the next challenge for Michigan State, because Michigan State's schedule is absolutely brutal. They will play in, I think, the first 3 weeks of the season or 4 weeks of the season, Kentucky, potentially Kansas, Duke, and Seton Hall. No one will play a tougher schedule the first 3 weeks of the season. It's crazy. I mean, it's absolutely insane, you know, what's going to go on. So I think the Big Ten, look, the ACC Big Ten challenge is around the corner. They're going to have to get some wins. If they get smacked in the ACC Big Ten challenge with what's going on in the gap of games right here, and then they also don't have anything to their name in terms of exempt events, this could be an all-time low number of teams that can win the NCAA tournament for the Big Ten. Because if you don't take care of business in your non-conference, let me tell you something. It is hard when you're playing a 20-game league schedule to make up any hay in your conference.
I agree. I mean, I look.
What do you think about Michigan State tonight? What do you think about Michigan State?
I think they'll win tonight just because I think that Miles Powell isn't playing. I mean, and you've seen Seton Hall practice, and you love them, and you don't love every team. That's the beauty of our podcast. We're not sitting here in love with everybody. We're going to tell you what's real, and when Seth tells you a team is really good, I guarantee you they're really good. I personally, Seth, I'm not shot in the backside with Michigan State against good teams, because I think they need a guy to get hot, whether it's Arns or whether it's Rocket Wads. I don't know. I think teams are going to double up, bottle up, contain as best they can, Cassius Winston, and somebody going to have to make shots. And I'm not sure that they got a guy that every night you think, man, he's going to make every shot. I'll take Michigan State because I just think they're good enough, but I'm not in love with that squad. Last thing, and I know we got to wrap this up. I was impressed by Michigan. I thought Michigan's win over Creighton. They struggled for a while and did what a good team does. Yeah. Yeah. Good win. A good style of win too. Kind of took it over in the second half and did what good teams do. And, you know, you and I have expressed our undying love for Juwan Howard as a human being and as a basketball coach coming up with Riley. So I thought that was a good win, but man, I'll tell you what, I like Maryland. I like Ohio State. I'll give Michigan State. Illinois hasn't done anything to impress. And the rest, I don't know, man. Indiana, I do think Indiana is going to make the NCAA tournament. They're going to get off to a 7-0 start because they've got the easiest schedule, and then they play Florida State.
So you're allowed to talk about Indiana. That's good.
Just don't at me, Seth.
Well, hey, you know what? Well, next week we'll reconvene, and well, maybe we'll. Who knows? We might have another emergency podcast. This because
you never know. I hey, guess it's, Seth, it's Monday. It's Monday. The NCAA and Memphis.
Yeah, the Watchman thing.
Yeah, yeah, we might have to have. So an here's emergency the deal. Tuesday here's podcast. The deal.
Yeah, I mean, like if there's a kumbaya, you know, because everyone thinks, you know, here's the deal. I'm going to finish podcast with this. Everyone thinks the, you know, NCAA is the devil, and you can think of they're the devil, but until the devil changes their rules, right, there are rules to abide by. And either whether you're a great NBA player or you're a great player in football or basketball, if you break the rules, there needs to be a consequence or you have no rules. So like, look, get off your soapbox. I understand everyone thinks the NCAA sucks. Everyone thinks that the NCAA, you know, is antiquated. That's great. But until the rules are changed, that, you know, there's 352 members of Division I that are members of the NCAA. If 340 of them are following the rules, you know what? The other 12 that aren't, they have an advantage. And that's just the way it is. So, like, until the rules are changed, your actions have to have a consequence.
Well said. I agree. And I thought Chris Spatola hit that really hard last night.
Spats, my man Spats.
He was great. He was.
He's the man.
Yeah. Hey, wherever you listen to your podcasts, let's make sure that you download us, give us a listen. And I'll tell you what, at Seth on Hoops, at Dan Dockage 5, I've got a new Twitter handle, because the deep state's got me. But anyway, let us know what you think, good or bad. We don't care. We're coaches. We can handle it. Spotify, Seth. You're going to promote somebody else's podcast because we're team
players. Yeah, that's what we do. We are great teammates. Check out the brand new podcast, ESPN's Daily, hosted by Mina Kimes, Monday through Friday. She takes a look at the most interesting stories at ESPN in just 20 minutes. We could never do that.
No.
Listen and subscribe now to ESPN Daily, wherever you find your podcasts.
Hey, everybody, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions, as I said, go to our Twitter handle, at Seth on Hoops, at Dan Dockage 5, and let us know what you think, and we'll talk about
your
questions.
Come on, at us. Come on, at us.
Yeah, we want to be added at. I think next week, I think we're going to get a little football. I'm going to try to get Urban Meyer on the show.
I like it. I like it. I like it.
Is that all right? Would Urban be interested? I mean, you know, that'd be all right.
I think Urban would be good. Talk about the state of college athletics.
Yeah, talk about he's opinionated now.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.